It's 51-50. Half a second remaining. Shoop to tie it and send the game into overtime. She misses. Beloit wins. Free throw on the way by Shoop. Left it short. Rebound Larson, and that's the game. Beloit wins. 51-50. Moves on to the sub-state semifinals.
Well, when it's the Beloit girls playing basketball, you might as well just figure on it coming down to the final minute. That's just what happens. 13 of their 21 games have decided by 7 points or less, and they've had a buzzer beater and won 57-55 lately. They lost by two to Southeast. They beat Smith Center on a shot with 10 seconds to go by two last week. Last night, they went by one. Survive in advance. It's never been more appropriate than last night in describing what happened to the Beloit girls against Minneapolis. We talked about on our show yesterday that it was going to be a battle. It was going to be tough. And Minneapolis jumped out to a 9-point lead with 3:29 to go there in the second quarter. And Beloit would come back, and we'll get to that in a moment. Shea Larson led away with 23 last night and 3 3-pointers. She made 9 threes all year, made 3 clutch ones last night, 2 there to close out the first half. And Beloit overcame a 9-point deficit in the span of 3.5 minutes to tie the game. Then they were up 12 in the third quarter. And then Minneapolis came all the way back and cut it to 1 on a couple occasions. And as you heard there, at the end of the game, Minneapolis had a timeout, 18 seconds to go, drew up a play, got a couple offensive rebounds, and then Shoop was fouled with half a second left. And she was fantastic last night. She had 24. She's one of 2 seniors from Minneapolis. They would not be in that situation with a chance to tie at the line without her. And she's only a 41% foul shooter. Minneapolis, the team, only 49%. And she swished the first because she got 2 because it was 10 team fouls, double bonus. And she swished the first. And the second one she left short, Beloit rebounded. That was the game. So it was very simple. She makes both. We go to overtime. She misses one of the two. Game over. Season over for Minneapolis. Beloit moves on. That's a lot of pressure to put on one person in particular. I know a senior may be more equipped for it. But still, that's not only the end of the season for that senior. That's the end of her high school basketball career.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because she played really, really well last night. And I'm sure, as I would be focused on the missing the free throw at the end. And right away, I saw assistant coach Mitch Shea go out and applaud and the effort and everything from Minneapolis. And there is no way they're in that game without Zoe Shoop. But unfortunately, it came down to free throws. And she made the first, swished. Second one, just pulled the string maybe a little bit. Maybe nervous, maybe not. Just left it short, and that was your ball game. So I hate to see games decided like that at the line in regards to, somebody missing. Like, if somebody makes them, they earn it, fine. Although I'll have to say, I don't really like to see that either. I like to see in action defending. You can't defend a free throw, obviously.
Yeah.
But I really hate to see when somebody misses free throws. I mean, granted, KU fans like, I don't mind. Memphis missed a lot of free throws. That was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but do you remember 2003 when Nick Collison and Jeff Graves were clanking free throws?
Yeah.
You didn't like that so much, did you?
No.
So it goes both ways. And for Beloit, I think a lot of their fans are probably like, hey, that was awesome. We won. We survived. Exhale. And they're glad that Minneapolis missed a free throw. But that last night, that could have easily been the other way around. And Beloit could have been at the line, and they missed a free throw, and their season's over. When you get to this time of the season, it is a difference between winning and losing is razor thin. And last night, it was razor thin. And that was a 2 seed versus a 7 seed. And we knew it would come down to the wire. I said in the pregame, I said, I just got this feeling it's going to come down to the final possession. Little did I know it'd come down to the final free throw with half a second left in the game. You just don't see that very often.
No. I mean, you see free throws like in the last 10 seconds that are important, but that's a pretty – I've never had that happen that I can recall that it was – we're at the free throw line here to tie it with a half a second left.
You know, it's interesting. I had a situation, state basketball. It was the – I'm trying to remember the state championship game or the state semifinals, Centralia. And they had a 50% foul shooter, Dallas Beck, go to the foul line, and he had to make 1 out of 2. That was a little bit different situation, but there was like 1 second left or something crazy like that. And he had to make 1 out of 2, and it was a 1-1. So you missed the first, it's over. He had to make the front. I'm pretty sure that's how it happened. No, he didn't. No, that's wrong. It was two shots. He was fouled on a shot.
Okay.
So it was about a second to go. This is state, I think state semifinals, if I remember. Maybe it was state championship. And he's at the line, and he is. And I say he's a 40. I think he's a 44% foul shooter. Now, my memory's starting to come back to me a little bit. So this is a while ago. It was 15, yeah. 16, 17 years ago. So he's a 44% foul shooter, Dallas Beck is. He goes to the foul line, and I'm saying on the radio, that first one is so important because you want to make that first, so it takes the pressure off the second because you're down one. Mm-hmm. You make the first, you know at worst you're going to overtime. But if you miss the first, now you're going, oh, my God, if I miss the second, now my team loses. I didn't even make one. So what does he do? He missed the first.
Yeah.
And I'm about ready. I'm losing my mind up in the press box because I'm covering Centralia. And I'm like, oh, my Lord, are you serious? I mean, he made it just tougher. This is tougher than the first one. And he shoots the second, and he made it. And when he made that second free throw, Centralia went nuts because they were like, dude, that's a 44% foul shooter. And I just knew once he made that free throw, they were going to win the game.
Yeah.
And they did in overtime. But he made it really tough. He missed the first, made the second, and that forced the overtime, whereas last night you're down two, you can't miss one. You got to make both. So I've seen a similar situation in a bigger game in the final seconds, but it is a little bit different. That person only had to make one out of two, whereas last night the girl had to make both free throws.
Yeah.
You never had one of those like that come down the final second?
I can't think of anything.
If you did, I bet you remember.
And I might have had some, you know, maybe that they made free throws to put it into overtime, sure. And I don't remember because they didn't lose. They ended up winning. But right. I don't even remember any of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had some good games here lately on the radio.
Yeah.
You had a couple great ones, regional championships.
Most of my games lately have been they make free throws to stretch it so far out that
– yeah.
Like Brandon Bates makes a three against Osborne at the buzzer, and it's a one-point win for Osborne because they were up by four because they made a free throw.
Right.
This last one, I guess, was not decided by free throws, but for the boys there for St. John's Tip. Mm-hmm. That's the way you like a game to be ended.
Yeah.
Is with the guy ball in his hand, three-pointer to win, and then mm-hmm. Brady goes up and gets a tip on it and blocks it. You know,
chance to tie it win.
And so it's in the action.
Right.
You know, it's not at the free throw line. And
I'm with you.
It's within the offense or whatever you're running to try to win.
In that situation, Trista Bovee was going for a rebound, so was Shoup. I thought it was both players had a right to go for the rebound. And Bovee bumped into her. I thought, uh-oh, they're going to call a foul. That was my first reaction in my head, and they did. I was like, oh, that's on Bovee. And I don't blame her at all. She's just going for the ball. She is. You know, and that's the thing. That usually is a non-call.
Yeah.
At the end of a game, usually, you know, the other team will scream about a foul, but usually that's a non-call. Both players going after the ball, running into each other about the same time. But the official determined that Shoup had got there just a nanosecond ahead, and then Bovee bumped into her. I give credit to the official because I've claimed for a long time, you have as well, well, you don't call this stuff at the end of the game. Why is it that you call it for, you know, all game long, and then if there's a foul on the final play, it's a foul. If it's a foul, it's a foul no matter when the game is. And the official, to his credit, the officials, or at least he, didn't look at the clock and go, okay, no matter what, we're just not going to blow the whistle here and somebody gets mugged. And he called the foul. And the problem is you put all the pressure on a young lady at the line in that situation. Now, you give her the opportunity, the flip side of that, you give her the opportunity, you know, she's really fouled. She should have the right to go to the line and have a chance to tie the game for her team. But it's just, it's tough to see anybody. If you have any kind of decency and you have any kind of heart, even if you're a Beloit fan, you got to feel for many in regards to the losing it in that way, because it was a great game that neither team really deserved to lose.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then the season is over. We'll get to Shauna Remus. We're going to play a little bit of her interview last night after the game because we had a little bit of fun with Shauna in regards to asking about her stress level. So you'll want to hear that coming up in a little bit. But other action around last night, as we said, Beloit wins 51-50 over Minneapolis. Larson 23, Meyer at 12. And Minneapolis last night, 7-3, 6 in the first half, but only 1 in the second half. And Zoe Shoup had a wonderful game in her final game as a senior. She had 24, and Cameron Cleveland had 10. So the Blake girls are now 15-6, move on. Sub-state semifinals on Friday against Norton, who knocked off Hoisington last night.
Yeah, Norton won 58-34 over Hoisington. Not a real close game at any point except for when it started. So Phillipsburg beats Concordia last night 68-53. That was a little closer than I thought it might have been.
Me too.
Phillipsburg got the win. That's all that counts right now.
Maybe they could have been up 25-30 and put in backups.
Yeah,
and
true.
Sometimes we don't know how the game went.
Yeah.
Sometimes we look at final scores. You know, you just presented it. 65-64. Oh, it came down the final shot. Well, no, it didn't. They're up four. Yeah. They made a three to make it look a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it really is a last second shot that wins the game. Sometimes we see that with games where a team wins by 20. You're like, oh man, I thought they'd win by 30 or 40, or they only won by 12. Well, sometimes you call off the dogs
exactly.
And you put in the backup. So that might have happened.
Yeah. So we don't know how the game went, but Phillipsburg won by 15 anyway, so they move on to play TMP coming up in the semis. TMP beat Russell 47-43.
And they're familiar with one another.
Very.
Phillipsburg and TMP just played in the boys, I think, a fourth time this year. The girls have played multiple times, so
yeah.
There's just like we saw last night with White Minneapolis. You're familiar with each other. There's no big surprises. It's going to be a dogfight.
Yes. So those semifinal matches, like you said, Norton against Beloit and TMP against Phillipsburg. And then last night in 2A boys, Smith Center saw their season come to a close. They fell 59-42 at Ellis. Knew it was going to be a tough matchup for them. And Smith Center finished the season at 6-14. Also of note from that, Ellis Substate Republic County saw their season come to a close with a 69-51 loss to Plainville last night there in the Ellis Substate.
All right, so here's our broadcast schedule coming up the rest of this week, or at least Thursday and Friday. Coming up on Thursday night, tomorrow night, we'll have boys substate semifinals for you on Z96.3 Lake and KDCountry94.com. Dusty will make the trip up to Marysville, St. John's Tipton boys against Gossel. Pregame at 5:45 tomorrow evening on Z96.3 Lake. I'll be in Beloit. I'm sorry you have to travel, but last year I had to do a lot of travel. Of course, you might have too. I don't remember where you were last year, but where were you in 1A last year?
Oh, yeah, I traveled.
Yeah.
Wabunzee and...
yeah, you traveled.
Yeah, whatever.
You went to Clay Center.
Wabunzee and
too,
Clay Center,
I,
yeah.
We hit,
that Wabunzee Thursday, Clay Center Friday.
Because I dropped
Saturday.
You off one time when I went to Riley, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, it is nice to have it at home, I will say. I like not traveling. 3A boys, Substate semifinal in Beloit. Coming up tomorrow night, 7:15, thereabouts, with the pregame, number 5, Norton versus number 1 seed, Beloit. I'll be on KDCountry94, KDCountry94.com, live video stream at nckssports.com, via the Beloit Trojan channel. And then coming up on Friday, it is the girls' substate semifinals, Class 1A, St. John's Tipton girls against Centralia at 5:45 pregame. That'll be on Z96.3 Lake and KDCountry94.com. And also on Friday on KDCountry94, KDCountry94.com, it'll be 3A girls' substate semifinal, number 3, Norton, at number 2, Beloit, also live video stream at nckssports.com. We have Beloit Trojan channel. Osborne girls will be in action coming up on Friday. They'll be out in Russell. They'll take on Sharon Springs. That's a 6 o'clock tip on that one.
I know
the Thunder Ridge one is a late one. Thunder Ridge is at Waukenny.
Yeah, I think Osborne's early.
Okay. And then Thunder Ridge girls, a tough assignment, even though they're undefeated. They take on Otis Bison, who's 21-2. That's at 7:30 on Friday out in Waukenny. So best of luck to those teams. And I think... that and then the Sylvan Lucas boys, we should mention them.
Yeah, they play Thursday 7:30.
They play tomorrow night at 7:30 against
Logan.
Oh, that's right.
Osborne is 6. Yep.
Osborne girls are at 6.
They are 6 o'clock on Friday. Yep.
All right. So all the information available at nckssports.com, all the brackets and broadcast schedule and all of that. All right. Like I said, last night I had a chance to catch up with Coach Sean Arimas after the exciting win over Minneapolis. Minneapolis was in control, 25-16. Beloit was on the ropes at home, down 9. You'd think the pressure may be mounting a little bit. And with 3:29 to go before halftime, Sean Arimas called a timeout. And after that timeout, Beloit went on 27-6 run to regain control of the game and then hang on in the end. And I asked Coach Arimas about that timeout.
Well, we talked about how we were settling, and we can't just settle for long shots. We need to get the ball inside, and we had to pound it inside. We had to find a way to get Shea involved and find a way to get Portia involved and make better decisions with the ball. And they did that. We came out, and we were able to kind of sneak our way back into the game. And it was too bad we had halftime right there, because we were kind of getting in a groove, kind of getting in a rhythm. But I knew this game was going to be like this, and I knew it was going to be a dogfight, and we're just lucky we came out on this end of it for sure.
Let's talk about the roller coaster emotions, because you're down 9, and all of a sudden you go on a 27-6 blitz. You're up 12. Now you're in control of this thing midway through the third, and then you knew they would probably make a run. They go on a 12-2 run. It's a 2-point game. And then it comes down to making one more play at the end.
And they did a great job of attacking and dribbling and driving. And I think we got tired. I really do. I think there was a possession of 2 or 3 where we got tired. We didn't guard, and they were able to attack on the inside by dribbling and got back in the game. And then the momentum kind of shifted. And I kept telling the kids, "Oh, we're ahead. You know, we this is our game to lose. We're ahead." But it was just a great game. I mean, I don't know what to say, Wade, other than we just found another way to win. And maybe they outplayed us tonight, but we had enough plays at the end to actually get the job done. And proud of the kids, proud of the effort. And, you know, Minneapolis played a heck of a game.
Let's talk about Shea Larson tonight. We've seen stretches this year where she's taken over. We saw it down at Russell. She did it again tonight.
She did, and we needed her, because they were totally taking Jess out of everything, and we needed Shea to step up, and she had a smaller girl on her, and she was able to take her, And, yeah, super proud of how she did step up when we needed her most. And there was – I thought Trista Bovee did a great job defending there, you know, towards the end. And Nelson was hot. I mean, she was crazy. Everything she shot in that first quarter was going in. And so we had to change defensive mindset a little bit on her. And I thought Trista did a good job shutting her down there towards the end.
Well, let's go – let's expand upon that a little bit. Nelson had 9. She did not score in the second half.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, and she was all over – you know, that first quarter, hitting threes, getting fouled, hitting threes. So, there you go. I didn't know that. I haven't seen the stats yet. But they, you know, their seniors were big for them, and our seniors were huge for us. And so it was just a fun game, I'm sure, to watch. I'm sure it was a good game to call, but I'm super glad it went our way.
Your last 6 games, lost by 2, 1 by 6, 1 at the buzzer by 2, 1 by 7, 1 by 2 in the final seconds, and win by 1 in the final seconds.
Yeah, we plan to change that on Friday. We're gonna win by
double digits. Your stress level doing?
It's high.
Here?
It is extremely high. Extremely high. I'm not going to lie. Dr. Pepper is the only thing keeping me alive. It's like...
I think all the parents would agree with that as well, and
yeah,
the fans.
Yeah.
But they get their money's worth when they pay to come in and watch you guys play
this
year.
That's right.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. 13 games this year decided by 7 points or less. 15 of the 21 decided by single digits. So when Beloit plays the girls, there's rarely a blowout, and it usually comes down the fourth quarter. In many cases, it comes down to the final minute or last possession of the game. And it's been basically the last 4 or 5 games, it's come down to the final 30 seconds, last possession of the game. And Beloit, most of the time this year, has been able to find a way to win those close games. So we'll see if they can keep it going coming up later this week. All right, Big 12 basketball. It is senior night in Lawrence. KU taking on TCU. You can listen to it tonight on Z96.3 The Lake, your home for the Chiefs in North, or for the Jayhawks, and the Chiefs too, by the way. The Jayhawks in North Central Kansas, as KU will play tonight, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip-off against TCU, fresh off their upset over number 2 Baylor. Bill Self on whether Doak, what about his injury? Will Doak give it a go tonight with that sprained ankle? I think a lot of KU fans would say, let's just go ahead and rest him, getting ready for Saturday in Lubbock, and we can win without him against TCU on senior night. But here's the thing, Doak is a senior, and he would really like to play on senior night. Here's Bill Self.
Well, I think the one he's dealing with right now isn't remotely close to anything he's dealt with in the past. We're talking about maybe a game now as opposed to seasons before. So, you know, I think he's handled it well. You know, the one thing that I kind of take confidence in, when Doak hurt his knee his sophomore season, the year we go to the Final Four, he was unbelievably disciplined and did everything he possibly could to come back. So he showed that he can come back from an injury. But he's trying. You know, he's getting treatment 4 or 5 times a day and doing everything he's, you know, supposed to do. And, you know, it's one thing to want to play. It's another thing to want to play on senior night. So I know he'll do everything he can to get out there.
Udoka said in a quote yesterday, "It's my last home game at the Fieldhouse. I really want to play. I've been rehabbing a lot. It's getting better. Hopefully I'm going to play." And I would imagine that's a game time decision tonight. Udoka Azubuike is so important to Kansas's chances of winning a national championship that I would say if you have any fear that he's going to make it worse tonight, even as much as Udoka wants to play, I think you've just got to do the right thing for the long term. And you say, man, we love you. We know it's senior night. We know you want to play, but we're going to hold you out here. We're going to hold you out. We shall see what Kansas does and what Bill Self does and whether Udoka Azubuike plays tonight. Do they need him on the floor to beat TCU? See, that's the other factor here. And I don't think they do, but TCU just beat Baylor, but it was at TCU. TCU not nearly as good on the road as they're at home. But that is the $64,000 question. What if you don't play Doak and then you're down 6, 7, 8 points in the first half and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, we need him, and then you suddenly decide to play him. And maybe that's what they handle tonight. They have him start, take him out right away so he can get announced on senior night, and then they pull him and have him on the bench as long as they can. But if they get in a bad situation, they put him out there. Here's the next question. How effective is he going to be if he's not even close to 100%, which we don't know what his percentage is going to be, but I'm sure it's not 100% if he goes tonight. So there's a lot of tough decisions to make tonight for KU with Udoka Azubuike. What's best for him? What's best for the team? What's best for them tonight? What's best for them in the long term? Because you do have Texas Tech on the road at Lubbock coming up on Saturday. And let's be honest. I mean, if KU wins tonight, they still will more than likely have to win Saturday to get the outright conference title. If they win tonight, they still would have to win on Saturday to get the outright title. Now, if they win tonight, they're assured at least a share of the conference title. And then how would they approach it come Saturday? If Udoka's not feeling that great with the ankle, do you sit him out until the Big 12 tournament? Or hold him out all the way until the NCAA tournament? Because that's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So we shall see how KU handles it. This is why Bill Self gets paid the big bucks, man. These types of decisions. And we'll see if he plays tonight. You can hear on Z96.3 Lakewood pregame at 6:30. KU, a considerable favorite. And they don't lose on senior night. I can't remember the last time. I think the last time I lost on senior night was maybe early 80s. I don't have it in front of me, but it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen in Lawrence on senior night. Nobody comes in and ruins their party on senior night. We'll see if TCU can change that this evening. Elsewhere, K-State will be at Oklahoma State tonight at 8 o'clock on ESPNU. And Oklahoma State starting to play a little better ball. They're 15-14, 5-11 in the Big 12. K-State at the bottom. They've clinched the number 10 seed, which is not a good thing. That's your bottom seed for the Big 12 tournament. K-State's lost 9 in a row. And on the road in the Big 12, they're 0-8. They are 9-20 overall, 2-14 in conference play. And Bruce Weber, his team, gave it all they had against KU, came up a little bit short. Now they got to be ready to play and go to Stillwater.
You know, you worked so hard to get here. It's still, if you love the game and you love your teammates and you're proud to be at K-State, you come and get ready to play on you know, Monday in practice and go to Oklahoma State with that same mindset. And, you know, it's I hope they do. That was my ask, my wish, you know, in the locker room. And I hope for their sake we can get ready to play.
Well, it's about pride right now. And I guess the thing that K-State can target is, let's get better so that maybe we can put together a Cinderella run in the Big 12 tournament next week. And if K-State would win the Big 12 tournament, they would be in the NCAA tournament. It's automatic bid. They're not eligible for any of the other postseason tournaments, but the one they still have a chance is the big one. That's the NCAA tournament. If they win the Big 12 tournament next week in Kansas City. So we'll see how K-State handles that on the road. But it has not gone well for K-State on the road this year. 0-8 in conference play. And overall this season, they're 1-9. On the road, so that doesn't bode well for K-State on the road at Oklahoma State. Last night, Big 12 action. Texas continues to find ways to win. They edge by Oklahoma, and that was a game of two teams that needed a win to help their chance of making the tournament. And right now, I would think they're both on the bubble, but Texas has played their way in, perhaps, this tournament. They beat Oklahoma last night, 52-51 in Norman, and West Virginia finally gets a win at Iowa State, 77-71. So the Big 12 standings, there's two teams and then there's the rest. As we know, KU's 15-1, Baylor's 15-2. But here's where things get interesting if you're thinking about the Big 12 and how many teams get into the big dance. Texas is 9-8 in conference play, and they're at home against Oklahoma State, which you'd expect them to win that game. So they would finish, if they win that, 10-8. And if they don't, they're 9-9. Overall right now, they're 19-11. And they've won 5 in a row. They've been playing really good ball lately. So Texas may have very well played themselves into the NCAA tournament after losing by 29 about a month ago at Iowa State, who's not very good. Shaka Smart, a lot of people said he's not going to survive the rest of the season. All of a sudden, they rallied around him, and they've won 5 in a row. Texas Tech is 9-8. They're tied for third in the Big 12. They're 18-12 overall. They're squarely on the bubble. Oklahoma's 8-9 in conference play. They're 18-12. They're squarely on the bubble. West Virginia's 8-9 in conference play, 20-10 overall. West Virginia has a better resume overall than those other teams I mentioned, but technically West Virginia right now in the standings is sixth in the Big 12, and they get a host Baylor on Saturday. So West Virginia could very well end up finishing sixth in the Big 12, and they're probably going to be the third shoe-in to make the NCAA tournament because of their non-con and what they accomplished. And Texas and Texas Tech and Oklahoma could all have better Big 12 records, but have a slightly less a record as West Virginia overall. But this is what you get every year, bubble time. Your bubbles usually are teams that are 17, 18, 19, 20 wins, that are around 500 in conference play. And if you're in a mid-major, if you're like Wichita State and you're in the American Athletic, you can be 22-7, 10-6, and right now you're on the bubble. You got to do a little better than in the Power 5 conferences. But You tell me, Dusty. I haven't looked at bracketology. I try not to look at it too much because, you know what, that's not the official word on it. But, you know, obviously KU is going to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. I don't see how they're not. Baylor, I think, still going to get a number one seed. If not, they'll be at worst a two. And then after that, I mean, to me, the Big 12, you could make a case the Big 12 only get three teams in this tournament. And that'd be KU, Baylor, and West Virginia. But Texas, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, what do you think? Those three teams. What about West Virginia? What if West Virginia loses to Baylor at home, which could easily happen, and then they lose the first round of the Big 12 tournament? West Virginia be 20-12 and finish 8-10 in the Big 12. I mean, maybe suddenly they're on the bubble, because from my last I've heard, they were probably still good, but their seeding is sliding downward.
Like, even as bad as they were recently, all the way until last week, they were still ranked. And so that's the thing, is like the rest of the country is kind of in the same boat here. You know, like the Big Ten's the deepest conference, probably, and the best conference right now from everything I see.
Right.
But the rest of the problem is the rest of the country's kind of in the same boat as far as these Power Five or whatever conferences are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
West Virginia, I think, will probably get in just based on their past merit.
Yeah, I think they're in, but even if they do struggle here at last few.
And they might end up saying West Virginia's on the bubble, but I think they'll be all right. Hey, if Texas keeps playing like they are, continues to win here down the stretch, I think they'll get in. Tech is a team, I think, that they can't just, like, tailspin out here the last week. But if they win a game here, of course, they got Kansas coming up, but if they win that game, they're in. I mean, I think they're probably pretty good.
As of 2 days ago, according to Joe Lenardi, who lets a lot of people go to bracketology, although there's some other guys that do it too, and he's fairly accurate in regards to getting the right teams in the tournament. He misses maybe three or four. But here's what he has, and this is 2 days ago before Oklahoma lost to Texas last night.
Yeah.
He's got Oklahoma as a 10 seed. He has Texas Tech as an 8 seed, which is higher than I think a lot of people would have, but they do have some really good quality wins. He's got West Virginia as a 7, and he's got Baylor and Kansas as 1s. So he doesn't have Texas in the tournament right now, but he might have.
So
he might flip Oklahoma and Texas.
About, you know, it's like Texas, if they continue to win, is in, and Oklahoma's not. It's kind of
and that win last night by 1 point at Oklahoma could be the difference.
The difference between Texas or Oklahoma making the tournament, exactly.
Well.
And especially, you know, yeah, I know it's a body of work thing, but they'll look at those last 10 games for Texas, you know, say, hey, look at how they're playing coming into the tournament.
Yeah.
And right now they won their last 5, and when they looked like they were dead in the water.
Absolutely.
And so Oklahoma's a team that this seems like not to take advantage of their opportunities that are in front of them throughout the whole year. Mm-hmm. Like, you win this game,
they did
you
go to West Virginia and
they
win
did do that,
recently, so they did get that.
They got that, but then they lose at home to Texas. It kind of offsets
I agree with you.
You know, you got to win.
And West Virginia's
you
struggling.
Have to win this game. Exactly. And West Virginia had lost 6 of 7. Now that's 6 of 8. But you have to win this game against Texas last night if you want to cement yourself and feel comfortable about it.
That's the key word, cement.
Yeah.
Now you're on the bubble, and who knows what's going to happen. It's going to be interesting to see. And you know, it happens every year. We'll have Selection Sunday or whatever, and people will rant and scream about teams that should have been in. And we're just arguing about mediocrity is what we're arguing about, because none of those teams that didn't make it in are more than likely going to be a national championship contender anyway. Now, the one exception was VCU.
But
they got red hot. They weren't a national championship contender. They were one of the last.
You'll get a team like South Carolina or something like that that wasn't like really highly rated coming in. They're like an 8-9 seed that might have been, you know, somewhere near that bubble at some point.
Was South Carolina that low of a seed when they made the Final
Four? I think
they
were 8 seed, if I remember right.
I didn't think they were that low, but they might have been.
But, I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
You'll get a team like that, you know, quote-unquote, was maybe a bubble team late in the season. But they worked their way into the tournament, and they weren't going to be left out of it. But
right. Well, and we've seen, you know, obviously VCU's 11 seed. They made it to the – they made it.
Yeah, and VCU's the one that, you know, the first four team that did it and made it all the way to the Final Four.
There's been 11 seeds that have made it. I'm trying to – I'm gonna see if I can figure that out. I'm just kind of curious what seed they were.
George Mason was like a 11.
They were 11.
Yeah
they were. Pulling up here and seeing if they've got. I didn't think South Carolina was that low of a seed, but looks like. What do we got here? 2017. The NCAA tournament. They played. They were a 7.
Seven.
They were a 7. They played Marquette a 10, and then they played Then they played Duke a two. Then they beat Baylor a three. And then they beat a four in Florida. And then lost to Gonzaga in the Final Four. So they were a seven. You're close.
Yeah, I thought it was eight. I was one off.
Well, they beat Duke, so you probably think Duke was a one.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
You know, they usually are.
Yeah.
That's very true. You can win. You can, and this year is wide open. I mean, we could very well, every year I hear that, well, this is a year. It's going to blow up everybody's brackets, and no one seeds are going to make it, and there's no dominant team. And Kentucky, you put them in there. They're great. But then there's going to be a six seed and a five seed and a seven seed. I think there's a 10 seed that can make it. And then what happens? A lot of chalk.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you anticipate a lot of upsets, we don't get them. And when you think it's going to be chalk, then that's when we get our upsets. This year, everybody's thinking it's going to be a crazy tournament. There's so much parity and there's no dominant teams. And now watch. Gonzaga, San Diego State, Baylor, and Kansas will be in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Because that's your top four seeds, your number one seeds right now. Somebody will get all on the Duke bandwagon because that's what everybody does with Duke. You know, I know what their seed is. Well, I think Duke's going to do it, which they very well could. They got talent.
Yeah, and you'll see a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 South Carolina.
Somebody will make a run.
In one of those brackets, but you don't get that. There's not going to be a one seed at all. It's going to be, like you said, 3, 4, 7, and 10 in the final.
It's not going to be that crazy.
No.
There's always going to be either a one or a
even
two
as,
seed.
As everybody thinks every year, some years there's dominant teams, some years there's not. And those years that there's not, everybody thinks it's going to end up like that. Well, just because they're not dominant doesn't mean they're not better than the rest of the country.
Bingo.
Okay?
Bingo.
That's the same thing this year. I got a guy saying last night on Twitter that the Big 12 is actually a much better conference than we think this year. And I'm
wrong.
No, it's really not.
Wrong.
I'm like, you can say that they're going to get 3, 4, 5 teams in. That might be indictment about the rest of the country, but that doesn't mean they're a good conference.
No.
Compared to the past, this conference is nothing. There's two teams. There's two really good teams in this conference, and that's it.
Well, listen,
that is like you can't. Some of these teams you can't even call good.
There's
that are going to make the tournament.
There's two ways to think about it. There's the way of going. The Big 12 is so great because they have two great teams. Or the other way is there's two really good teams getting fat on everybody else in the Big 12.
Yeah.
And, we hear this a lot of times. Well, the big argument, which is a waste of time, which conference is better, blah, 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 over the years. And well, the ACC is better. And I always think the ACC is better top to bottom than the Big 12. Well, yeah, but the Big 12's 7th team is better than the ACC's 7th team. Yeah, but usually judge conferences on how many national championship contenders do they have. In the Big 12, it's always Kansas and no one else. And the ACC usually got 3 or 4, Virginia, Duke, North Carolina. Florida State's from time to time. There's always 3 or 4 in the ACC. This year, the ACC's down a little bit, no doubt. And the Big 12's down. And then the Big 10 is way up. But the Big 10 doesn't have anybody that's going to be number one seed because they beat up each other.
Yeah.
So, what's the best conference? Well, if you look and if you think, the best conference is the one that has the most national championship contenders, you got to put Kansas or you got to put the Big 12 near the top based on that thinking. But if you're talking from top to bottom, there's two heavyweights in the Big 12 this year, and that's Kansas and Baylor. And all you got to do is look at the standings. Baylor has 2 losses. Kansas has 1. And the third place team is Texas. And they're 9-8.
Exactly.
And without a 5-game winning streak, they were what? A few weeks ago, they were the 7 or 8 seed for the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah.
That tells you how bad the conference is.
They were 4-8.
Listen,
now they're 9-8.
That tells you how bad the Big 12 conference is. If Texas, who was about ready to fire their coach, and nobody wants to attend any of the games at home, and got beat by 29 at Iowa State, and Iowa State is a bad team, people. How in the world can you think the Big 12 is a really good conference this year when the third best team right now is a team that lost by 29 Iowa State? And if not for a 5-game winning streak, they've gone from 7-3. That tells you just a whole bunch of mediocre teams. Are there teams there capable of pulling off upset? Sure. I think Texas Tech's the third best team out of all of them. And they beat Louisville, and they almost beat Baylor. I think Texas Tech is better than the record indicates. But the proof's in the pudding. You are what you are. Their record is, 18-12? And they're 9-8 in the Big 12? Okay, you go from 1 to 2 losses, all of a sudden you go to 8. Third-place team has 8 losses in conference. That's not a good conference. That is not a good conference.
If your conference has depth, there's not going to be any more than 2 games difference between each spot.
Well, look at last year. You had KU 12-6, 13-5. They finished 3rd. Texas Tech and K-State are both 14-4. And then I think West Virginia was 12-6. You had 4 teams at the top that, except for about a couple of games. That's a much better conference last year than this Big 12 this year.
Yeah.
But I think some people are getting caught up in, Baylor and KU are going to be 1 seeds, and that just doesn't happen. We don't get 2 1 seeds. So the Big 12 is a great conference because they have 2 dominant teams. No, and KU and Baylor may be legit. They may be absolutely fantastic, and we might see them in the national championship game facing off in an all Big 12 title in Atlanta. That could happen. I bet you it won't, but it could happen. But as you said earlier, there's no dominant team across the country, and are we a little bit, is this a little bit of fool's gold with Baylor and Kansas? And by the way, Baylor and Kansas, they had some really good non-conference wins, okay? Yeah. So I don't think it's a fluke. But you could ask, did Baylor and Kansas, are they fattening up on their overall record because the conference isn't that great? And you could say the same thing about some teams in the ACC this year.
Oh, yeah.
North Carolina's down. So some teams are fattening up. Virginia is down. So you can fatten up on your record, although Duke isn't. They've had some really bad losses. So once Duke and Carolina aren't quite as good as they once were and Virginia's fallen down, the ACC doesn't look like a great conference, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at the standings, it's a lot tighter than the Big 12. So which way do you want to look at it? You know, I say tomato, you say tomato. Is it apples and oranges? Are we talking Big 12 has got the two most dominant teams and thus it's the best conference? And if you're just judging on top two teams, isn't that a flawed idea? At the same time, if your argument is this conference is better than the other conference, like they've said in the past with the Big 12, because our seventh best team will beat your seventh best team, well, that's silly because now we're talking about NIT teams playing each other.
Yeah.
So to me, that's why it's a waste of time to spend a lot of time on what conference is better. To me, the bottom line is, which conference do you think has the most teams that can make a run in March? And to me, that tells me what's the best conference.
Yeah.
And sometimes the conference you think is the deepest doesn't do well in the tournament because it's all about matchups. You know, it's all about matchups. And so to me, you know, to me, the Big Ten is the best conference. I don't think it's that close because I think they've got Maryland, they got Michigan State, Ohio State. I know has had their ups and downs, but they were ranked number two early in the year. Michigan is a team that was ranked in the top five early in this year. They're just, you know, they're cannibalizing each other in the Big Ten because all those teams are really good and everybody's great at home, where it's hard to get a road win in the Big Ten. And they play more conference games in that conference than anybody else in America. And so, to me, the Big Ten has four, maybe five teams. That Penn State's had a great year. They might have four or five teams that you could legitimately say this year, when it's wide open, as most people agree, that can make the Final Four. How many teams from the Big 12 do you think can make the Final Four? I think two.
Yeah.
How many teams ACC? I think two, maybe three at most. So if you judge it that way, and that's how I usually judge it, then I would say the Big Ten's the best conference. I don't think anybody's going to argue that this year. But to say the Big 12 is having a great year, or they're a really good, great conference this year, then you're ignoring the bottom eight teams. And you're not looking at the standings.
They're better
either than
you think they are with analytics. I don't care about analytics.
I don't care about analytics.
Okay? You know, analytics don't mean anything about what I actually see on the court. And I see 1-2 and then 8 losses.
Here's
in
the
Big Ten, I see 6-6-6-6-8-8-8-9-9.
Boom. Like, boom. There you go.
I see Maryland 15, like you were talking about. I see Maryland 15-1 at home, 5-6 on the road.
There you go.
I see Wisconsin 14-1 at home, 5-6 on the road. You're going, and every night's tough on the road in the Big Ten, like you just said. And this conference, I mean, you got four teams that have 6 losses at the top of the conference.
And that's a sign of a great conference is when teams win their home games and you have a hard time winning on the road.
Yeah.
Whereas Kansas this year hasn't lost a road game in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Now, come on, man.
And these are like the biggest. Rutgers is 18-1 at home, and they're 1-8 on the road. Like, they're West Virginia, this conference.
Yeah, right.
You know, like we're going to win every game at home, but we're going to lose every game.
Well, you look at, I mean, just to give you an idea, I mean, you know, in previous years when Kansas has won the Big 12 title, they will have to eke out a win at Norman. They have to find a way to win in Ames. They will usually lose at West Virginia. They might, from time to time, lose in Manhattan. They've lost at Tech, I think, before. Not very often. But this year, they went to Iowa State. That game was over. I mean, they killed Iowa State. They went to TCU, and they won that game easily. They went to Oklahoma without Devon Dotson and won by double digits. Okay?
Yeah.
They won at Texas. That was a close game. That was a tough one. They won at West Virginia and closed out in the final 8 minutes and played great. But to me, that shows me how much weaker the conference is. I don't think that tells me KU is better than they have been in previous years when they won the Big 12. It just tells me that the Big 12 isn't nearly as good. Oklahoma State's not what we thought they might be. K-State's fallen off the map, as we know. TCU is not as good as some people thought before the year. They're around a 500 team. Oklahoma State hasn't gotten better. Texas was not very good until recently. Texas Tech is underachieved with losing games they shouldn't lose after getting great wins. And then West Virginia, we know all their struggles here lately. So I just went through almost every team in the Big 12, and there is major, major flaws in every one of those teams. The other sign that a conference, and then when you got so many of these teams that can't win on the road, but yet you look at the home records, they're good for some of these teams in the Big 12. But overall, when you have two teams that are seven games better than the third place team in your conference, that's not a good conference.
No.
It's not a good conference. But if Baylor and Kansas make the Final Four, guess what the narrative will be?
The Big 12 was better than we thought.
No, Kansas and Baylor were who we thought they were.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
There's not a lot of years where you can go in, the teams at any portion of the schedule can say, hey, we got to win no matter what when K-State comes to town or we play K-State.
Right.
You know, 4-14 the last 4 years, I think, is the worst record in the conference, and K-State's on their way to 2-16. I mean, they're going to have to.
Maybe Iowa State at home.
You know, they might beat Iowa State.
Iowa State's pretty bad. Here's the other thing why the Big 12 isn't very good this year. All you got to do is watch them play offense. I mean, we talked about it. Is KU and Baylor's defense that good? I think it is really good. But I don't think it's as good as people think it is because you look at the teams. I mean, we talked about the first few weeks of the conference season. Nobody could score more than 60 points. Last night, 52-51 was the final. Texas at Oklahoma. Those two teams could be in the NCAA tournament. They scored a total of 103 points.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why the Big 12 isn't that good, because they're offensively challenged. And then people will counter that are Big 12 proponents, and say, that's because they play unbelievable defense in the Big 12. Listen, when guys miss wide open threes, that's not good defense.
No.
That's bad offense. And I've seen a lot of it this year in the Big 12. A lot of it. And that's why the two teams that actually have decent offenses, and KU's not a great offense either, by the way, and Baylor's not a great offensive team, but they're decent. And they're probably above average defensively. So you put that combination together, here we are, dominating the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, the Chiefs have to make some decisions here this offseason. One of those, of course, was already mentioned as they exercise a franchise tag on Chris Jones. No surprise there. We discussed that last week. There are reports the Chiefs will not exercise their option on Cam Irving's contract, the offensive lineman, who started in place Eric Fisher, didn't do that great. I mean, he held his own, I guess. But he's a backup lineman in this league. He's proven that. And his contract calls for him to make $3.25 million in salary, but all that money would come off the cap. And they're just over $1 million in dead money. So the Chiefs are going to decline the option on Cam Irving's contract. He started 8 games in place of the injured Eric Fisher last year. The Chiefs also have Stephon Wisniewski set for free agency on the offensive line. That's a guy they picked up early part of the season when they had all kinds of injuries on the O-line. So I believe Andrew Wiley is a free agent as well. So, I've heard this from some people, and I disagree, respectively. But when people are telling me that Patrick Mahomes needs to take less money, or the Chiefs got guys that should take less money and not get these big contracts because they need to spend the money on the O-line to protect, you know, their franchise player, and I agree to an extent. You have to have left tackle and right tackle. Now, I still have concerns up the middle with the Chiefs' offensive line. Austin Ryder at center is undersized. I do have some concerns there. I think the Chiefs can address that in the draft. I think they can draft a center and might be able to take over that role. But left tackle, they have an all-pro, Eric Fisher. They were undefeated when he played. So the backside of Patrick Mahomes is protected at left tackle. At right tackle is one of the best in the business, Mitchell Schwartz, who was an all-pro. So they've got the tackle positions figured out, and that's the most important, too, offensively on the line, to protect your quarterback, because the quarterback, when he drops back, the pressure usually, not always, but a lot of times it comes from your speed edge rushers. So if Fisher and Schwartz can hold their own, which they did when they were healthy this year, then Mahomes usually can navigate, and that gives a little bit more time, and he can make some plays, get out of the pocket, whatever. Now, I grant you that if there's a great guy right up the middle of the pass rush against Austin Ryder and blows him off the ball, then Mahomes might not have a lot of time to throw the football, and there can be pressure from wherever, from the opposing defense or a blitz and this and that. But listen, there's ways to build a football team, and spending all your money on the offensive line is not a good way of winning in this league. The Chiefs have clearly made it very clear that they spend their money on their offensive weapons. 74% of the Chiefs' salary is on offense. 74%. A lot of that is tied up in Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins. Now, that'll go down when they cut Watkins, I would imagine. And, of course, they're going to have a lot of money tied up in... Well, they got money tied up in Damian Williams, although that's not horrible. They're going to have a big-time money tied up with Patrick Mahomes. But I hear this. Mahomes needs to take less money so they can spend money on the offensive line to protect Patrick Mahomes. Just because you spend money on offensive line doesn't mean he's going to be protected.
Yeah.
By the way, this year, Patrick Mahomes made $2.7 million. That's what his salary is going to be this year, and I think that's what it was last year. Patrick Mahomes made $2.7 million last year, and did anybody see him lying on the ground in pain with a dislocated kneecap in Denver? So then I hear all this, well, you know, Mahomes is going to get $40 million or whatever it is. He'd be smart to take a little bit less so they can invest that extra money in the offensive line. Okay, so let's see Patrick Mahomes buys your argument. Mahomes says, you know what? I'm going to take $35 million a year instead of 42 or 40, and I'm going to tell the Chiefs to take that money and invest it in the offensive line. So the Chiefs go out, take that money, and they got Eric Fisher at left tackle. They got Mitchell Schwartz at right tackle, but they're gonna pay a guy to be a really good center to replace Austin Ryder. Are you with me?
Yes.
Okay. And they're going to spend a little bit extra money, and they're going to find a guy to plug in at left guard in place of Andrew Wiley. So the Chiefs on paper are improved on the offensive line, correct?
Yes.
Do you win games on paper?
Not at all.
Do you block the opposing defense on paper?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so let me ask you this. When Patrick Mahomes, in that situation, Patrick Mahomes, somebody makes a mistake on a blitz pickup, or it's just simply somebody runs over the new center that you spend extra money on because Mahomes saved that money to spend on a center or a left guard or right guard or a backup left tackle to replace Cam Irving and Fisher gets hurt. And then Patrick Mahomes gets drilled, and he's out with broken ribs. Think Patrick Mahomes is going, boy, maybe I should have just got all my money.
Yeah.
Because that didn't help me. Let me tell you something. Spending money, a whole bunch of money on the offensive line doesn't guarantee you jack squat. I can tell you this. Spending a lot of money on a franchise quarterback guarantees you you're going to be in almost every game. We know this because Mahomes has never lost a game by more than 7 points in the NFL. Think about this for a second. If you want the Chiefs and you want Mahomes or you want the Chiefs to spend extra money in the offensive line to protect their franchise quarterback, which I get the thinking. That is logical. But here's the thing. This year, the Chiefs' offensive line, would you say it was great?
I wouldn't say great. No.
I'd say it was average, maybe slightly above average. They had a Austin Ryder, an undersized center. They had to pick up a guy off the street to play left guard. And that was Wisniewski.
Yeah.
Andrew Wiley's a free agent. He wasn't a starter the year before. Your right guard has had injury problems, and that's Tardif. He's a serviceable right guard, but he's not a great right guard. And then you got your pro bowlers at right tackle, left tackle. Those are the two most important positions on your offensive line. You cannot spend $20 million on every single guy on the team. So you have to pick where you're going to go. But for me to hear people say, well, Mahomes should take less money so the Chiefs can invest more money on defense. Okay, I get the logic. Well, Mahomes should just offer to, hey, here's $5 million I'm not going to take so you can go improve our offensive line. Just because you go get a guy that you think is better doesn't mean that's going to protect Patrick Mahomes any better than anybody else on the offensive line. No. If you look at the great teams, all you got to do is look at the New England Patriots. Can you name one offensive lineman during their 6 Super Bowls? No, any Hall of Famers?
No, not right now.
Zero. Yeah. There's no Hall of Famers. In fact, the Patriots, year in and year out, usually trade one of their best offensive linemen because they want more money. Yeah. And one recently went to the Detroit Lions and got a ton of money. You know what? Patriots are still pretty good without that guy.
Yeah.
You know why they're good? Tom Brady! You know why the Chiefs are good with Steve Wisniewski, a guy off the street at left guard? Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Okay? You do not spend a ton of money on your offensive line because you can get guys off the street that can actually do a decent job even during the middle of the year. You don't have to have 5 Pro Bowlers in offensive line. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the Chiefs have Will Shields and Willie Rofe on the same offensive line?
Yes.
And did they ever win a playoff game?
And Brian Waters.
And Brian Waters. Did they win a playoff game?
No.
Nope. Did not. Did not. And do you know that Trent Green got injured for a significant portion of that 1 year, and he had Hall of Famers on the offensive line? So when you say, well, Mahomes should take less money, and we just filter it to the offensive line because Mahomes, you know, he's got to worry about his own health care. Well, whether Mahomes is making $1 million, $2 million, or $100 million, he's still in danger no matter who's on the offensive line. Let me tell you something. You can take Anthony Munoz, and you can take Willie Rofe, and you can take Orlando Pace, and the best offensive lineman in the history of the game, and put those five and protect Patrick Mahomes in their prime. And you know what? Mahomes is still going to get hit. You know why? Because teams will bring extra guys. He's going to get hit. Five Hall of Famers can't block eight. They can't block seven. There's going to be times where there's miscommunication. The guy's going to miss a blitz pickup by the running back.
Yeah.
Okay? And or Mahomes is going to scramble, and a lineman can't protect him once he scrambles, right?
Yeah.
So I get a little bit, I don't want to say annoyed, but I'm like, dude, just because you spend money everywhere doesn't guarantee you anything. But where it does, where you are guaranteed to be successful and always be in it to win it, as long as the guy's healthy, is franchise quarterback. And I know I just said, as long as he's healthy. But this year, the Chiefs didn't have the greatest offensive line, and Mahomes was only making $2.7 million. And wasn't he probably out for the season there for a moment?
Yeah, it felt like it. Seemed like it might be the case.
He had a sprained ankle multiple times this year. Yeah. He had two Pro Bowlers on the offensive line. He still got hurt. Well, that's why we got to spend more money to improve the guys in the middle. Okay, great. You spend that money. One of those guys gets hurt. Are you going to spend $15 million on a backup left tackle? No, you can't. So you got to pick your choices and your spots and where you spend money. And guess what? Where do you usually go a little bit cheaper? Offensive line.
Yeah.
Why do you think, if you go back and you look at teams that won Super Bowls, what you need to do the research and find out what rounds these starting offensive linemen on Super Bowl winning teams, what rounds were they drafted? What you're going to find is a lot of them are mid to late round picks or free agents that are starting offensive linemen for Super Bowl winning teams.
Yeah.
Why? Because offensive linemen are nice. They block. I'm not knocking offensive linemen. You need a line. Don't get me wrong. But a great quarterback can cover up a lot of warts on your line. All you have to do is look. When you can keep interchanging linemen year in and year out like the Patriots did to win six Super Bowls, I'm going to tell you, what was the common denominator? The quarterback, who also changed out multiple running backs. They changed out defensive personnel. Remember, they traded Richard Seymour in his prime because he wanted too much money. The two constants were not the line or the defensive linemen. The constants were Hall of Fame quarterback, franchise quarterback, and a Hall of Fame coach. Guess what the Chiefs have? A guy that is on route to being a Hall of Fame player in Patrick Mahomes and a Hall of Fame coach. So, no. Patrick Mahomes, if you want your full $40 million or whatever it's going to be, power to you, because I'm going to tell you right now, next year, if he needs to get as much guarantee money as he can, and if he takes a discount, power to him, great. That's his decision. But if he goes out and gets hurt first week of the season next year, what's the excuse people are going to make then? We didn't spend enough money on the offensive line. That's why he got hurt. Well, I hope you're okay with losing, no Chris Jones. Kiss him goodbye. You're not going to find any kind of free agent corner. You're already up against the cap. You're probably going to have to you can't renegotiate any contracts, in regards to Hill or Kelsey if they want to hold out. You have a guy that's pretty cheap at running back, Damien Williams. So I'm looking at it financially and going, if you're going to spend a lot of money on the line or you want to move a lot of money to the offensive line, you got to cut in other places. Where are you going to cut? The Chiefs, we know their bread and butter is their offense, right?
Yes.
74% of their salary is tied up in offense. And that number will probably go up, obviously, when Mahomes gets his extension. Because a lot of people are caught up in the Chiefs have a lot of money wrapped on the defense. Well, they have two big contracts, Frank Clark, and they've got a three-year deal, which isn't too bad, with Tyrann Mathieu. That's the only big contracts the Chiefs have tied up on defense. Chris Jones is franchise tagged. So that could be a one-year deal, about $20 million. Well, that's going to hurt them because right there, the 18 under the cap. You give Jones 20, you do the math.
Yeah.
They're two over. Watkins, take him off 14. Now you're 12 under. Now you work out an extension with Mahomes, and you got Kendall Fuller you like to bring back. Maybe you can bring back Rashawn Breeland, which I don't think probably he will, because I think he'll get a multi-year deal elsewhere. You're not going to give him 2 or 3 years if you're the Chiefs. And you still got to spend money on the draft. So where would your money be better spent? I want my quarterback happy. And my quarterback says, I'll take $35 million and I want more money spent on the line. Okay, fine, done. I'll do it, Patrick. If Patrick says, hey, I want my money, my agent, I want $42 million. This is my huge, big contract because there's nothing guaranteed that I won't have a career-ending injury next year. If I'm Patrick Mahomes, you cash it, man. You take the deal. And if you sit here and say, well, Mahomes is selfish if he takes all that money, isn't that enough money? Listen, first of all, he brings in a lot more money than $40 million a year, that Chiefs franchise. With merchandise sales and winning Super Bowls and winning playoff games, Mahomes is worth every penny. And the Chiefs have gotten off cheap because it's a rookie deal right now. So when people sit here and tell me, well, Mahomes, that's going to hurt the Chiefs if he takes that big deal. Yes, it limits your flexibility. I get that. But it's going to limit your flexibility in various places. But that's where you have to plan ahead. The Chiefs have tried to plan ahead. They may overextend themselves with Frank Clark. But guess what? They were like the Royals in 2015. They went after guys to get over the hump to win a Super Bowl. They had to improve the defense. They spent the money. They did it. It worked out. The Chiefs are much like the 2015 Royals. The Royals gambled. They were all in. They put all their cards in the middle, and Dayton Moore said, listen, this is our chance to win a championship and bring it home to Kansas City. I'm going to trade for Johnny Cueto. And everybody was freaking out when Cueto was so bad during regular season. That's not the reason they traded for Johnny Cueto. It was what he could do in the postseason. And by the way, in the postseason, he had one horrible start. He had two really, 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 really good starts. And that was worth every penny and every prospect they traded for Johnny Cueto to have two great starts in the playoffs. It helped them win a World Series championship. They trade a lot of prospects for Ben Zobrist. And guess what? Ben Zobrist was the better of the two pickups, and he was only there for, what, 4 or 5 months? Helped them win a World Series. And we said at the time, this is only good trades if the Royals win it all. If they don't, then it's going to be bad because you deplete the farm system. You're going to pay for it down the line. But if you win a championship, it is worth it. That's exactly what happened. It was worth it. We can live with losing seasons. Lose 100 games of your Royals fans for the most part because you know we got a World Series championship. And, yeah, we put ourselves around 8-ball in the future, but we went for it because we had a chance to win it. The Chiefs this offseason went all in. They spent the money on Tyrann Mathieu. They spent the money on Frank Clark, okay? Maybe gave him a little bit more than they needed to. But they were all in. They made a trade. They got rid of D. Ford. They spent money on Tyreek Hill. They got him on a contract extension, all right? They brought in Sammy Watkins a couple seasons ago and spent a lot of money on Sammy Watkins. The Chiefs were all in. You know why they're all in? Because they knew it was important for them to win a Super Bowl before Mahomes gets his big contract extension because they have more flexibility now so they could make those big deals with Clark and Mathieu and others. And guess what? It all worked out great. Now here's the fear. The fear is that now you have a horrible cap situation. You got to make some tough decisions, get rid of maybe some key players on this team because you have big contracts with other players. You also have the extension coming up for Patrick Mahomes. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult to keep all the guys you want to keep. Odds are you can't. But that's the payment you have to turn in to win a Super Bowl. Yeah. And the Chiefs realize this. They're not stupid. They knew this all along. That we're in it to win it, and this is a window that we really feel like a great chance to win a Super Bowl or two is with Mahomes on his rookie deal. And by the way, he still has another year on his rookie deal. The Chiefs do not have to do an extension now. They don't have to do it before the season. I would say they'd be better off doing it before the season because what if Mahomes next year goes out and has an MVP season again? Price is going to keep going up. And the Chiefs made mistakes waiting too long with Justin Houston. You remember that? Where they could have got him cheaper, and they waited a year too long. Mahomes' contract, is it going to stifle the Chiefs' success in the future? I don't think it will. Why? Because he's that great of a quarterback. He's going to make other guys around him better. Losing Sammy Watkins, is that a big loss for this team? I think it's a significant loss, but if Mecole Hardman can step in and play that same role, then they're fine.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why they drafted Mecole Hardman. Marcus
Robinson steps up. And
well, he's a free agent.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
so
that.
So he's probably gone.
Yeah.
So Byron Pringle, but maybe he's a guy that's going
to
step in.
Basically, other guys that haven't been doing as much as Sammy Watkins might be doing just have to step in and do it.
Well, that's why the Chiefs drafted Hardman. Two reasons. One, insurance for Tyreek Hill. But two, they knew Sammy Watkins. They're probably not going to pick it up this year, which they haven't made that decision officially. But Sammy Watkins on his social media posts has basically made it clear that he figures he's probably
gone.
He's all
over the place.
Right, which of course he will not be back. I mean, at that salary, he's not back. Yeah. The Chiefs can't afford to do it. So you have to make some tough decisions. You know, the Royals made a decision to give money to Alex Gordon instead of Ben Zobrist. We said that particular day that was a mistake. And I still to this day say it was a mistake.
Yeah.
But that's what the Royals chose to do. Maybe the mistake the Chiefs are making here is franchising tag Chris Jones. Or maybe the mistake is the Chiefs are going to give him a big deal and they shouldn't. And they should trade him for a first or second round draft pick so they have more flexibility. There's no question that when you have big contracts, it hampers you. We saw it with the Chiefs with Justin Houston. We saw it with Dwayne Bowe, his contract, which was a bad one. We saw it with Eric Berry, and that part of the reason that was so bad, he didn't play. He's always hurt. But the guy that you really have to spend the money on, and in the one position you spend a lot of money on and you can still be good, is the guy that makes everybody better, and that is a franchise quarterback. So whether the Chiefs spend $38 million or $40 million a year on Patrick Mahomes, do you think that extra $2 million is going to get you an all-pro right guard?
No. You could draft a rookie in the sixth round. He might step in and be your right guard next year. Great quarterbacks cover up warts. Great quarterbacks cover up a running game that isn't that great. And by the way, the Chiefs running game wasn't that great, right? It wasn't.
No.
Okay. That offensive line wasn't great. It was decent. Wasn't great. The defense, you know, got a linebacker. They could use some upgrades. At corner, they're going to need to address that this offseason because they might lose two to free agency. You know, do you keep Chris Jones? And this is the first couple of steps. You franchise Jones and you let go of Cam Irving, and that saves you a little bit. The next big decision is going to be Sammy Watkins, which I think we all know what the decision is going to be. And then the next question is going to be do you sign Jones to a long-term deal or do you trade him? And the next step is going to be when, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, you give Mahomes the fat contract. And how are you going to structure it so that you have the flexibility to help your team and improve in different areas? I'm not saying the Chiefs can't improve on the offensive line, and I'm not saying it's not smart to spend some extra money on offensive line if it's there. But I'm going to tell you, of all the positions on the field, and I know it sounds weird to say because, well, you're spending $40 million on a franchise quarterback. Shouldn't you invest on a whole bunch of money to protect him? Well, that's great. You spend a whole bunch of money on offensive line to protect him, but if he has nobody to throw the ball to, does that help?
No.
Well, I mean, let's say you spend all the money on offensive line and you let Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce walk at the end of their contracts when they're still in their prime. Is Mahomes going to do great when he's got guys running 4.6 40s? They can't get open?
No.
No. So you have to figure out where you spend the money. That's why Brett Veach gets paid a lot of money and why Andy Reid gets paid a lot of money and the personnel people get paid a lot of money. But if there's any place that you can shave salary, if there is a place where you don't have to spend as much money, there's two positions. Offensive line
yes.
And running back.
Yeah.
You can get, look, Kareem Hunt was a third-round pick. He was awesome. Damian Williams is a free agent pickup. He's been awesome. Darrell Williams was an undrafted free agent, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's done all right. You know, the Thompson kid, Darwin?
Darwin,
yeah. Darwin Thompson, he was, a sixth-round draft pick. You can get guys to play running back. Terrell Davis wasn't a high draft pick. Some of the greatest running backs of all time were not high draft picks. No. You can find a running back in the fifth, sixth round or undrafted free agent that fits your scheme and your system. Priest Holmes works out pretty good. There's a guy that couldn't do a lot in Baltimore, had one 1,000-yard season, goes to Kansas City and flourishes. Why? Different offense, different system. And, yes, he had a great offensive line to run behind. But that great offensive line did not win the Chiefs the Super Bowl. It didn't even win them a freaking playoff game.
Yeah.
Okay? So if you're going to have to choose between a great offensive line and a great quarterback, that is a no-brainer. You go with the great quarterback because he can make everybody around him better. A great offensive line does not make everybody around them better.
No.
It helps. Don't get me wrong.
No doubt. I mean, listen, the Chiefs won a lot of games because they had an outstanding offensive line.
Right.
And they had a running back that figured out how to run behind that line in Priest Holmes. He was undrafted, you know.
And they spent a good chunk of money on that offensive line, which limited them on how they spent on defense, and their defense was horrible.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, it's good. You can have a lot of success with a really, really good offensive line that you spend money on.
Oh,
but
sure.
It's not going to be the focal point when you have a franchise quarterback that you need to lock up. Okay, your most important thing with the money that you want to spend is lock up your franchise quarterback,
and then work from there.
Make sure you have guys that can get the ball from him.
Yes.
And then work from there, like you said. You know, find the guys that are going to fit on the offensive line that aren't going to cost you an arm and a leg.
What's the two most important positions on the offensive line in the National Football League?
Left and right tackle.
And they've got that covered.
Yeah.
Schwartz and Fisher.
Yeah.
So they've already addressed. So now you fill in between at center. That's why, listen, you know, if you're sitting here, who do you think's a better center? Mitch Morse or Austin Ryder? That's a no-brainer. Mitch Morse is a better center. What did the Chiefs do last year in the offseason? Morse was a free agent. Did the Chiefs give Morse a whole bunch of money?
No,
the Bills did.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs already had Austin Ryder that they signed to a very, very affordable deal
because
they knew
Morse was always hurt too.
Morse had concussions. But they knew that Ryder was going to be – they knew they were going to let go of Morse.
Yeah.
And they got Ryder groomed for the position. And last year, the Chiefs actually had a worse center on the offensive line than the year before. And does anybody complain about the Chiefs not spending money on center?
No.
Please help me, everyone out there. If you're listening, one person in particular, I'm not trying to be mean to anybody. I'm just presenting some things that people aren't aware of. The Chiefs spent less money at center, went with an unproven guy at center, and they won the Super Bowl. But we got to spend a lot of money on the line, Wade. Imagine if the Chiefs gave
Mitch Morse all the money the Bills did, and of course Morse had concussion issues, and where would we have been last year?
Yeah.
Maybe the same place Austin Ryder playing, but you would have had less money to spend on other spots. Like, maybe you wouldn't have had money for Tyrann Mathieu. Maybe you wouldn't have had enough money to get Frank Clark. So those are things. The Chiefs are always, I mean, honestly, Brett Beach, I think, has done a great job. He's been ahead of the curve knowing, listen, I need Sammy Watkins in case insurance for Tyreek Hill, because we know Tyreek has some off-the-field incidents before and so forth and so on. I need Mecole Hardman as insurance, but I also need him as a kick returner, but I also need him in case Watkins is going to be gone. Hey, I need Austin Ryder to step up. We'll get him on a cheap deal because I'm going to let go of Mitch Morse. Hey, you know what? Damian Williams, I signed him to a 2-year, $8 million deal, even though he only played half the season, but he looked good in the playoffs because we let go of Kareem Hunt, and we can then spend money elsewhere. Those are brilliant moves.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant moves. The most brilliant of all, trading up to get number 15. That was the big one.
Yeah.
Now the brilliant move? Well, I don't know if it's brilliant. I think it's just smart. Give the man his money.
Oh, it's a no-brainer.
If Mahomes and Steinberg say, listen, we want $40 million, and the Chiefs like, man, we only give you 35 because we want to spend a little extra money on the offensive line. Do you think the Chiefs are really? No! He brought you a Super Bowl in 2 years. He took you to 2 AFC title games in 2 years. Time to pay the man. Pay the man. Well, everybody can live off of $38 million. I mean, what do you need 40 for? Well, if you're making $40,000 at your job and somebody gives you 60, well, you lived off of 40. Why do you need 60?
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.